Welcome to Carittles. This week, building your network with competitors. The question this cast answers are, how can I develop relationships with people whose employer competes with mine? What can I discuss with a contact in a competing company? And how do I connect with people in competing companies?
Folks, anytime you think about building your network, you've got to think about learning to communicate differently with people who behave differently than you. And the start of that is by coming to our website and signing up for an MT disc. It's only $30. It is way more detailed than our previous product. We've upgraded it significantly, and we've cut the price by nearly two-thirds because we didn't like our old vendor's price, so we created our own. And I've said this many times before here on podcasts, learning DISC and understanding that communication is what the listener does, and we have to learn to communicate differently to different people who behave differently than us because diversity is a good thing, may be the most important thing I ever learned in my professional life. So take the MT DISC. It's only $30. Come to the website, sign up. Easy. You're done in 20, 30 minutes, and you'll get 30 to 40 to even 50 pages in some cases of detailed guidance about how you can change your behavior to be more effective in your professional life.
This podcast came out of a question that a listener sent to us, and this is what he said. What ways can I develop my external and industry network outside of our customers when most of those in my industry are competitors vying for the same business? So in this guidance, we're going to answer that question because not only can you develop relationships with people in competing companies, you should, and there's reasons which we're going to explain.
And if you've listened for a while, you know, we don't say should very often.
No, we don't.
We don't. So, yeah. Okay, so our outline for today is you can and should build a network with competitors, keep confidential what should be confidential, and connect on topics of mutual interest.
So the most important message of this guidance is not only can you build relationships with professionals at competing firms, you should. And as Andrew says, we very rarely say should. So if you've heard us just say that like three times in a row, this is really important. So if you don't listen to the rest of the cast, you've got it. Go meet people in competing companies. But now we're going to tell you some why and some how and so on. There is no reason to restrict your network to only your firm or firms that don't compete with yours. And we understand why people say, oh, you shouldn't meet with that person who's in a competing company. We understand the optics of it, and we understand why people would say that was problematic, but they're wrong.
Yeah. And Wendy, I think this goes back to, oh gosh, it was one of the first rules from the very first network cast, which is build your network indiscriminately. Indiscriminately means also indiscriminate of where they work, right? I mean, exactly. You have to also consider that. Yeah, we want you to build your network to be as big and robust as possible. And that includes absolutely with competitors.
It would make no sense for us to say, build your network indiscriminately and then say, you can't talk to people in competing companies.
Exactly.
Like we just cut the number of people you can talk to by like 90%.
Yeah.
And the people that are most likely to have different ideas that you can benefit from or who could benefit from your ideas are the people who aren't in your circle. All you get from the people that work at your company is not entirely groupthink. It's not because companies are a little bit more diverse than that. Mm-hmm. But there's an element of we understand the world in this way. And so the ideas you get are the same ideas. And so when you go to a different company, you're like, oh, they're doing it that way or, you know, something completely different. The people you're most likely to be able to help or get help from are the people that are doing it differently from you. The people that know about opportunities that you could benefit from are probably in different companies, not in yours. The people in your company only know the opportunities probably that you do.
Yeah, and I would consider that, now everyone has biases, mm-hmm. right? So people at a competitor are going to have biases in terms of your relationship and the things that you talk to them about and potential opportunities down the road. And so do the people that you work with in your organization. But one of the things that, as I was reading this before we started recording, was I think of, you know, sometimes the best opportunity for you might be to leave the organization, might be outside of the organization. But if you have internal resources or your internal network, they have a vested interest, hopefully, yes, if you have a good relationship with them,
right?
In keeping you. And so there's a conflict there, right? Now, you could definitely argue you're trading one set of biases for the other, but I would argue don't trade them. Get both,
yes,
right? Have exactly. An internal network and your network that is comprises competitors. So really, really, I think good guidance here.
And we're going to explain in a minute, your company as an organization does this all the time. So there's no reason for you not to do it. And what's more, the people that say it's problematic haven't thought through their own logic properly. Because one example, right? They'll tell you that they're concerned that you might go to a competitor. You know, you might meet with somebody at a competing company, they romance you and you're swayed and you go over to that company, right? And that's what they're worried about, that you're going to be poached. But on the other hand, they're usually fine with you finding someone at another company to come and work at your current company. They're okay with you enticing people to work where you are. They just don't want it to happen the other way around. Your company can poach from another, but others can't poach from your company. The only logic to that is a double standard.
Absolutely. And this says nothing, of course, of the fact that you're a professional and you can only be poached if you have assessed the opportunity, the offer that's on the table, and made a decision that the new opportunity is better for you and your family. You can only be seduced if you're willing to be seduced, right?
Yeah, it's not like they kidnap you. You actually have to make the decision yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And one more criticism of this logic. When a peer of yours, someone you have a good relationship with, goes to work at a competitor, are you supposed to cut them out of your life and never speak to them again? That doesn't make any sense either. You know, that people don't exist once they don't work at your company.
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
It makes no sense. And it's short-sighted. We all know, right? We have a cast on Boomerangs.
Yes.
People come back. Mm-hmm. And so what if that person comes back to your company 2 years later, but you've just completely shut them out for 2 years because they worked at a competitor, right? Now your internal network is damaged as well. Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. Do you know the phrase sent to Coventry?
Sent to Coventry?
Coventry.
No.
No. It's a place in England. When you send someone to Coventry, it means that you don't speak to them. But I don't actually know why it's Coventry, and I didn't know if it translated. And it doesn't, so there you go.
Not to me, but I wouldn't make me the authority the on the English language. Yeah, the arbiter of...
For everyone, you and everybody else, to get the benefit of a network, your network has to and really should include people who work at other companies.
Absolutely. Now, we do recommend that you keep confidential what should be confidential, right? There's a list of things that you must not discuss with professionals at competing companies. This is not only because information is a competitive advantage, but also out of respect for your colleagues and your current company. I would even argue too, Wendy, it's respect for those people that you're talking to at a competitor as well.
Yes.
Because telling them something that's confidential puts them in a very compromising situation.
Yeah, can I use this information?
Right. Is my obligation to use this information? Is my obligation, you know, it's just, it gets sticky.
And if you think this confidential thing is hard, I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to tell you two stories, actually. Mark has a really good relationship with a very senior Apple executive, and they meet for dinner or lunch about once a month. And that person has never given Mark the slightest hint what Apple might be working on. Not even like something that Mark had put together with some other knowledge that he knew. You know, when that guy was wearing, just after the Apple Watch thing came out, Mark was like, he's always had long sleeves on.
That's so good.
To cover the Apple Watch. Not a hint. Not in all the time. They've probably known each other for 5 or 7 years at this point. And I have a friend who's much less senior and and she maintains absolutely the same level of secrecy, confidentiality that Mark's friend does. The people at Apple are amazing at not letting anything out. And if they can do it, as big as Apple is and as big as their products are, everybody should be able to do it.
Oh, yeah. Their stuff is ubiquitous. There is a political element. There are some people with whom you can have a perfectly innocent conversation and your protests of innocence will not be believed. Just don't meet with those people. Don't meet with anyone about whom there is political ill will at your company, such as people who left on bad terms, have stolen business or taken, you know, clients or client lists, or who are otherwise just in generally thought of as shady, right? There's plenty of people to build a network without having to put yourself in a situation where your intentions or your, where you could be misconstrued. Mm-hmm. Your behaviors could be misconstrued.
Folks, since I've already convinced you to take the MT desk, once you do that, you've got to come to one of our effective communicator conferences. It's probably our most awarded training, simply because it's heavy on practice. You're not going to sit all day and just learn intellectually about how to change your behaviors. You're going to be expected to change your behaviors in front of your peers, your colleagues, your fellow attendees at the conference. It is probably my favorite conference to attend for the number of people who stand in line afterwards and want to shake our hands and say, I never knew. I couldn't believe it. Or, wow, this wasn't as hard as I thought it was. Never forget that only about 20% of the people in the world naturally respond to you. The other 80%, you're off somehow to them. But you can become on to them simply by understanding where they're coming from and making small changes, not big changes, small changes in how you behave. Come to the website, sign up for our Effective Communicator Conference.
So now we're going to talk about some specific things that are areas that are usually in the things that should be confidential. So the first one is the future. So anything that describes future plans, that's something you should keep to yourself. And that's one of the big fears of the people that say you shouldn't talk to people in other companies, in competing companies, because they fear that you'll give something away that you're working on. And that'll allow a competitor to get a jump on your company and make profits, which by rights should be your company's. Mm-hmm. So if you just avoid talking about any future plans, you avoid that problem. And in addition, you don't want to talk about past projects that are put in place as a foundation for future plans. So for example, if you've just finished a big purchasing product where a project where your company purchased a big new office in a new town, and that project is finished, it's done, it's in the past, but somebody could really draw some conclusions from the fact that your company's just like bought an office block in this new town. Like, it's like, oh, so you're expanding here, or you're moving people here, or, you know, not only is it obvious that something is happening, it's also a hint that this is where you could go look, because yeah, there's going to be rental agreements, there's going to be builders, there's going to be all sorts of people who have been supplying into that building as it's been renovated or as it's been built. And now the person that you're talking to potentially can go and, you know, this guy is the only guy that builds office buildings in my town. I'll just take him out to lunch and see if I can find out what's going on. So right, you don't want to give something that directly gives someone an idea that something's happening, but also an area that they could investigate.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a small world out there. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely acceptable for you to say something to the effect of, you know, I'm working on some stuff I can't really talk about. Or I think you could even say, I'm working on some stuff I can't really talk about yet. You
know,
it's still kind of in progress. And then just change the subject. If you're meeting with or you're talking to someone who presses you on that, then you can drop them from your network. There's a pretty good indication that they're not ethical if they're pressing you on that.
That's right. You don't need people like that.
No.
Next, don't denigrate anybody. So what we want you to do is be polite and even-handed, and just, as your mother said, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. You don't want to talk down your current company or your previous companies, people you work with, your competitors, or even people you don't work with. Like, when all you can think of is something negative, just don't say anything. And that goes for a lot of situations, including interviews where people...
Oh, yeah.
It's really common for you to say, so why are you leaving your current position? And go, I really hate my manager.
Oh, so
that's not a good sign for a recruiter when they hear that.
Well, and Wendy, I feel like we've said this in a lot of different contexts, like you just said. I think in the How to Resign casts, right? We said, you know, we laid out all the steps and then said, don't say anything bad about anyone ever, right? Just don't. And it's not easy. You know, it's easy to say, but when you're in the moment or somebody brings up somebody, we all have our own judgments and thoughts about individuals based on our interactions with them. And sometimes it's seen as, oh, this is my opportunity to kind of share my thoughts.
I'm going to vent right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not good for anyone.
It's not good.
And what's more, it doesn't build the relationship. Sometimes people think, oh, if I moan about someone or something, and the other person is moaning about the same thing, oh, we're bonding over the moaning. But what's happening is that person is thinking, yeah, okay, I don't like Samantha either.
Yeah.
But is Robert talking about me behind my back as well?
It's very short-sighted.
Yeah.
I think of it as like the common enemy thing.
Yes.
Like you get the feeling that like, oh, if we have a common enemy, we'll bond. The problem is that it's fleeting, right?
Yes.
It's only for a second. And then it ends up being actually harder to overcome that. Because once someone thinks that you talk about people behind their backs, they think you talk about them behind their back.
And everybody else.
And there's no way to prove them wrong because... you're not talking bad about them to their face.
Yes, so, exactly.
Right?
Just gets you in a difficult position. Yeah.
Exactly. What you do want to connect on is topics of mutual interest. Competing companies join together to further their mutual interests in every industry and specialty. For example, the Alliance for Automotive Innovation includes BMW, Ford, Ferrari, GM, and other car manufacturers. It's comprised of the manufacturers producing nearly 98% of new cars and light trucks sold in the U.S., as well as original equipment suppliers, technology, and other automotive-related companies and trade associations. This is from their website. They say Auto Innovators is dedicated to propelling the unprecedented innovation that will make our lives better, driven by the collective energy of the world's multifaceted auto industry. We are on the leading edge of transforming personal mobility in a cleaner, safer, and smarter manner. An organization that comprises companies who produce 98% of the new cars in the US, by definition, contains competing companies.
Yeah, it must.
It has to, right? So one recent output from the Auto Innovators was a guide for federal agencies on how they believe autonomous vehicles can be legislated and safely tested. All the companies are developing autonomous vehicles, and so working together to have a single voice to government to legislate their use makes so much sense. They don't need to give any secrets away other than what we already know. They're working on autonomous vehicles. Yet they benefit from that collective network, I would call
it. Exactly. That single voice is so much louder than each of them individually.
Yes, absolutely.
And if they're doing it at that level, that just tells you that there's benefits to doing it. And whatever the risks are, they're lower than the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do the same at an individual level. Every career contains two parts, the specialism and the industry. So you can be a lawyer, which is a specialism, in a healthcare setting, which is an industry. Or you could be a nurse, which is a specialism, in a law firm, which is the industry. Everything has two. You're an IT person in a car manufacturing plant. You're a IT person in a library system. You know,
yeah.
It's weird that sometimes you get like accountancy firms are full of accountants, but there's an accountant in every firm as well.
No, absolutely. That's a good point. Yeah.
Connecting with others in your specialism or your industry gives you the opportunity to benefit from your network without having to discuss subjects that should be kept confidential.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, as a lawyer, you could meet other lawyers from another firm at a training session for a new piece of legislation. And I imagine you could easily have several hours of conversation comparing the implementation of this piece of legislation to previous laws, to laws in other states, to the effect that you might see on cases in general, on what case law you'll expect to see and how soon and more. And without ever having to discuss a specific case that you're working on, and without ever having to break lawyer-client confidentiality, it's easy to say, I'm concerned that this law will mean that my clients who have stolen something for under $10 from stores will now have to go to prison. That doesn't break any confidentiality. It's just a generalism, right?
Exactly. Another example would be, you know, as a Java developer, you could go to a conference about Java implementation, like the history of Java and, you know, roadmap, and discuss the intricacies of how to solve generic problems with code all day without coming close to discussing the actual problems you're solving or work that you're working on right now.
Right. And it's easy to say generally, oh, we're working on a website storefront and I'm implementing it with products as entities. That's like one architecture option. And you can discuss storefront architecture options all day without being any more specific about what the products are or what your what the back end is like or anything.
This is a little bit of an aside, but I didn't realize how much of I'm not in that world, and I know a lot of our audience is, so I'm going to trip over myself right here, but I didn't realize how much of that information and things like that are open source or out there available. So that's none of that's confidential either if you're talking about that type of stuff.
And if you go to Chrome and you go to any website and you click developer tools, you can see all the code that runs that website.
Yeah.
So that's not confidential.
No, totally. Or you could make contact with people from other companies at an industry level. So you can talk about industry-wide problems and solutions without giving away commercial secrets. Professional conferences are designed for this. This is what they're for. The ABA Tech Show, for example, is a conference where you can talk about technology in the legal profession. They say legal work is increasingly dependent on tech, both in and out of the office. At this event, you get the chance to grow your tech competence while you get a glimpse at the future of legal tech. No one would think twice about you attending a conference like this and meeting lawyers from other firms. Yet the moment we talk about building your network with competitors, people start to get a little squirrely, right?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
No.
Building your network with professionals in competing firms is not something to be avoided. In fact, we're encouraging you to do so, because you can only reap the benefit of a network if it's well-rounded. Excluding competitors makes no sense. There's so much more that you can share than there is secrets that you need to hide or things that you need to keep confidential. And the industry or profession-wide problems are a good place to start. So if you're in a profession where, I don't know, they keep running out of internet numbers for addresses. You know, if you're in that, if you're in the industry of making internet addresses, that number problem is a problem that everybody is facing. And the more people that are thinking about a solution, the better. And not one single person is going to solve it. It's going to have to be a consortium. And therefore, talking to other people in other companies about doing that is a really good way to go. And at the same time, you're building your network. So you're, you know, all the benefits that we've talked about ad nauseum of a network is something that you are gaining. And I, like you, I'm not in that world, and I just probably described that internet addresses thing. We're going to get emails like, Wendy, you don't understand it. You're right. But
right,
hopefully the example worked anyway.
Yeah. If we get it in ones and zeros, though, then
we're good.
we won't be able to read it anyways.
That's so true. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.